Good morning, Rabbi Tzai. So continuing our discussion about the Asorah Hogei Malchus. Again, I have offered more than once to revert back to the halachas of the 3 weeks or the 9 days, but the response to that in favour of halacha versus the Asorah Hogei Malchus has been, well, the response has been zero. So therefore, we'll carry on with the Asorah Hogei Malchus. We learnt yesterday about number 6, according to the Eile Eskro, and again, we know that the orders are different in different places, was Rabbi Yehuda ben Domo. Now, and we mentioned yesterday that according to the Avodas Yisrael, Yehuda ben Domo never existed. There's no Tanna throughout Shas called Yehuda ben Domo. He says it's either a mistake and it was Yehuda ben Tamo, or it might be a mistake and it was Rabbi Loza ben Domo. But Yehuda ben Domo didn't exist. Nevertheless, in about 4 or 5 of the versions of the Asorah Hogei Malchus that we have from the various generations, there is a mention of a Rabbi Yehuda ben Domo. So we'll discuss, as I said, it might have been Rabbi Yehuda ben Tamo, might have been Rabbi Loza ben Domo, we don't know. Or there may have been Taka Rabbi Yehuda ben Domo, and we just don't know about him. In any event, it says that he was taken out, V'achrov hoitzio Rabbi Yehuda ben Domo. I think what I'll do is, I'll just read the Hebrew, because the English and not the Hebrew, because otherwise it just takes too long in the few minutes that we've got. So it says that that day was Erev Shavuos, and Rabbi Yehuda said to the Kesar, to the Roman governor, Chayecho, hamtein li ma'at ad she'akayim mitzvos aseres v'akadoshoy. It's Erev Shavuos, and I would like to wait until Shavuos comes in, until I could be mekabel on myself the Kedusha of the Yom Tov Shavuos. This is my last request, my final dying request. I want to thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he gave the Bnei Yisrael the Torah. So the Kesar said to him, you still believe in God after everything that you've seen that's going on here? You've seen the executions that have taken place of the previous Hogei Malchus. And he said, yes. So the Kesar said to him, Mas chora shel Torah secho? And what's your reward if you keep the Torah? So Rabbi Yehuda ben Domo said, David HaMelech said, "Umor avtuvcha asher tzafanti l'reecho, I will get my schar in olam habo. I'm suffering in olam hazeh, but I get my schar in olam habo." The case said, "Ein shoytim ba'olam k'moy atem." There's nobody in the world as stupid as you people, right? Sevurim sheyesh olam acher. You think that there's another world afterwards. There's nothing afterwards. There's this world, and then when you die, that's the end. So you're waiting for schar in olam habo. There is no such thing. Omalei, so Rabbi Yehuda ben Domo said, "Ein shoytim ba'olam k'moy atem." Yeah, and I believe that you're stupid. You're illogical. Yeah, koyfe b'alekim chayim va'olecha o'lebostecha. It'll be shame for you. O'lecherpecha, it'll be a disgrace. Why? Because one day you will die. You will come up to heaven, and you will see oisonuim Hashem ba'orechaim. You'll see us in Gan Eden. And you will be in the netherworld at the lowest level. Miat chora apoy shel hakesa olov. The kesa became very, very angry, and he decided he wasn't going to give him time up until Shavuos in order to make kiddush or to be mekadosh on mekabel on himself kiddush asayom. V'tiva lakoshoy b'saras roishoy b'znov hasus. They tied him by his hair to the tail of a horse. And to then drag him through the streets of Roimi. And we've had a number of cases where the Gemara mentions about Roimi, and it doesn't mean Rome, because this didn't happen in Rome. This happened in Eretz Yisrael. But when it says, for instance, by the Gemara in Avodah Zorah speaks about the Levaya, we mentioned this last week, or 2 weeks ago, that they mentioned about the Levaya of Rabbi Yosef ben Kismo, and it says, the Holchu kol gadoy le Roimi, that all the Gedolim of Rome went to attend his Levaya. It means, Roimi can very often mean Caesarea, Caesarea, because that was the headquarters of the Roman governance in Eretz Yisrael. They built the city as a port, and they built it as a headquarters, so that's very often referred to, Roimi is referred to. Therefore, they schlepped him through the streets of Caesarea, and then they commanded V'chotchu Evorim, they cut his body up. Elio Hanovi came, picked up all the body parts and buried him. Where? It says, in a place, Ma'ora Achas Asmucha, in Nahar Hayorid Lifnei Roimi, in a cave that's near Roimi. And for 30 days, there was the sound coming out of this cave of wailing and groaning for 30 days. And they heard it, and they were upset about it. And they went to the Kesar, and they told him that the place where Rabbi Yehuda ben Domna's parts have been buried, yeah, there's this terrible wailing noise coming out from the cave. Omar Lahem, he said, Im hoya hoil am nepach, le soyu vavoyu. Even if the world is about to collapse, I'm not abandoning my plan to kill the 10 tzaddikim. The rest of the story tomorrow.
Started the Torah in Northwest London, Monday, Kafkes Tammuz, 13th of July. Rabbi Avram Yecheskel Lessin Shlita, Executive Director of Stamp. The critical need for Ashgocha on mezuzos and tefillin. This week's Torah is sponsored. Linish Master Avram Abba Ben Menachem Arias from the Brachos. Yatzad is on Rosh Chodesh Av. There's Chus for Shlema of Rav Zay ben Toiba Brian Gup Neriyoa and our esteemed founder Yosef Dov ben Rav Shem Michal Tzvi Itzkovitz Zichrono Livrocha.
Thank you very much. I want to just thank the organizers, thank everybody for this opportunity. Thank you to John Simmons for helping set this up. And I want to speak about something that I feel confident has never been spoken about here before. I'll start with a bit of an introduction to remind ourselves what are the mitzvahs of Stam. Gonna just remind everybody who's here, everybody who's watching, listening, Stam is the acronym that we use for Sifrei Torah, Tefillin, Mezuzahs. Mezuzahs, before we get into any of the technical aspects of, as the title of the talk is, the critical need for Hashgacha, which we're familiar with in food, we're familiar with sometimes in Shatnez, we're familiar with in Arbaminim, familiar with in Mikvois, we're familiar with it in many different categories, but not in Stam. But in order for us to be able to gain a certain level of appreciation for that, we have to first just take one step back and remind ourselves, what are these mitzvahs? Mezuzahs that are on our homes are the items that coronate the home in order to make it a place where Hashem can feel comfortable, a place that His Shechina will rest, a place where we always think about mezuzahs, we think about protection. Number one, as the Gemara clearly explains, the protection part of it is a secondary benefit. The number one primary benefit is that we're being mekayim the mitzvah properly, and we can't forget that part of it. But there's so many stories that so many of us have heard about, this happened, that happened, the person has tzaras chas v'shalom lo aleinu, person has to go check their mezuzahs, and then I remember once I had a story where somebody brought me their mezuzahs to check, and we checked all the mezuzahs, and the mezuzahs were fine. And they were asking me to check them because they had some issues going on in their family. So when I told them the mezuzahs were fine, they said, darn. Meaning that people are always looking to blame the mezuzahs, that if something goes wrong, so... But the bottom line is that we know that there is that aspect of it, of tremendous protection, health, stability, shalom bayis, on all levels, that the mezuzah brings into our life. Tefillin, as we all know, is the conduit through which we are able to declare our love and commitment to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And we know, the Gemara tells us that we have that mirror image, our say Shema Yisrael, Hashem's tefillin say Mika Amecha Yisrael. We can't really have that complete sense of connection without the tefillin. Sifrei Torah, obviously the holiest of all physical objects that can exist in the world, a direct connection for us back to Har Sinai, and the guidebook that teaches us everything about how we want to live. That's the introduction. Just to remind ourselves, what are these mitzvahs? Why do we have them? What are they supposed to accomplish? Here's the main part about what I want to talk about and what I feel confident has never been spoken about here before. everything we just mentioned, aside, and I'm putting again aside for, I'm putting aside for a second the primary benefit, which is the Kiyum HaMitzvah, the fact that Hashem commanded us to do it, and it's our job to fulfill it. All these other things we mentioned are the secondary benefits. None of that can happen unless they are kosher. Your mezuzahs, forget about the fact that you also can't be mekayim the mitzvah, the same thing with tefillin and sefer Torah, they're not going to be anything for us unless we're 100% sure that they're kosher. So what I'd like to do over the next 25 minutes is to discuss where these items come from, how they are produced. Obviously, it's a universe in and of itself, but we'll try to at least just skim the surface so that we can get a sense of what that process looks like. And why is it that there are so many stories that we all hear about that are shocking? When I first started in STEM, and I'll just put this out there as a one-time definition so you can follow it in case I use the terminology again. Think of it as a mushel between an author and an editor. There's one job that's called the sofer. That's the one that I think everybody here is familiar with. He's the person who writes the stam. There's another person who's called the magia. The magia is the person who checks. They are not the same profession. The author does not proofread the text that he writes, and the proofreader is not qualified to be an author. Now, you could have people who are both. We do have people who are soferim and magiim, but typically speaking, they're two different jobs. When I first started out as a magia, I got a phone call from a very, very prominent Rosh Yeshiva that I am fairly confident that everybody in this room has heard of. For obvious reasons, I won't share the name. And he asked me to come. We took down the mezuzahs. We sat at his dining room table. We checked them, and the results were truly unbelievable. A mixture of Ashkenaz, Sephardi, Hasidish, half of them were Pusel. And I'm sitting there thinking to myself, how is this possible? He's a person who you would never expect such a thing to happen to. But it happens because of the fact that people are getting them from people that they trust, who oftentimes are getting them from other people that they trust, who are oftentimes getting them from other people that they trust. Similarly, I had somebody who came to me a number of years ago to have his tefillin checked. And this is really the story for me that I think really sort of catapulted us into this project to bring Hashgacha to the world of Stam. Approximately 65-year-old man bringing in his tefillin to be checked for the first time. First word of the first parsha begins with the Vav, the word Vayidaber. Clear that the Vav has never been kosher ever since the time that it was written. It came all the way down. It was already the length of a final Nun. He fell off of his chair onto the floor and started weeping, realizing that at 65 years old, he had never put on tefillin in his life. How is it that we're all hearing so many of these stories? The reality of the way the industry operates today is that 99%, and if I'm exaggerating, it's 98 or 97, but it's close to 99 either way, 99% of all stam circulating in the market around the world today comes from Eretz Yisrael. Which means you've got a handful of people here who are writing, handful of people where I was a month ago in Johannesburg, a handful of people in America and Canada and different places. The overwhelming majority is coming from Eretz Yisrael. And many of those people who are writing these items are Erlich Yirei Shemayim. A lot of them. I don't think any of us have statistical numbers to be able to say how many of them are, how many of them are not, but one thing we know for sure, many, many, many people in the industry who are writing mezuzahs and pumping them out into the world should not have anything to do, they shouldn't even be coming near anything having to do with stam. There was once a young fellow who was also the son of a very prominent Rosh Yeshiva, and he unfortunately, you know, had some issues in his life, and he became addicted to drugs and so on and so forth. A Rebbe of his came to him and he said, you know, I'm not here to give you Musar. I just have one question out of total curiosity. Drugs are expensive. Where do you get the money from? So he said, what's the problem? We have a group, 5 boys, 5 girls, a little shop on Rehov Ben Yehuda in Jerusalem. And we get together on Shabbos, a little room upstairs on top of the shop, and we sit there and we write mezuzahs. On Shabbos. The question is, we don't need to even spend a second going into what the problem with that story is, how would any of us ever know, once those mezuzahs come around and are being sold in the shops, how would any of us ever know where they came from? But these are stories that are happening every single day. And even if we would want to extend it into the category of the Seferim who are writing, who are Erlechi Yerushalayim, do they never make mistakes? Are there never any issues? A very, very, very big Rav in America came to me once and he said, you know, I love what's happening over here. I agree 100%. We need to have Hashkacha in Stam. What I need from you is, I remember he said it in this way, he said, I need you to quote for me chapter and verse. Those were his words. Where does it say that mezuzahs need to be checked? Not written, but al pi halacha, where does it say that they need to be checked? So I said to him, you know, it says clearly in Shulchan Aruch that, in Siman Lamed Beis, says that mezuzahs also have to be checked. Over there it's also talking about tefillin, of course. You know, that they have to be checked. Shulchan Aruch says, pa'amayim v'shalosh. Okay, but how do we know from that it's dafka over there? It's not talking about a magia. Magia is only somewhat more of a recent thing, where as, you know, the field has expanded now, like I was saying before, about the author and the editor. It used to be that the Sofer did everything himself, but it clearly says over there that it needs to be checked. But I told him, I said, you know what the truth is, though? That's not really the answer. The answer is that when we check mezuzahs, I have almost never met a magia who checks mezuzahs who has ever found a perfect mezuzah. Not even from the world's greatest Sofer. Because when you think about the, you know, a lot of people, sometimes they associate being a Sofer with sort of the artistic aspect of it. They sit and they have good hands and, you know, maybe they even have an artistic background. It's very, very difficult. And you're sitting there and you're writing Shema Yisrael over and over and over again. Kimei Shamayim al Aretz, back to Shema Yisrael, down to Kimei Shamayim al Aretz, back to Shema Yisrael. And you're going over and over and over, and without, obviously, you know, wanting to, you know, disrespect the institution in any way, it's very monotonous. It's very, very difficult. And you're writing the same letters over and over again with the same technique over and over and over again. These things happen. But I have never met anybody in our organization with the magim who are sitting and checking these mezuzahs. We've kimat never, ever had a mezuzah. And keep in mind, these are only seifrim who we rely on and we certify and we have agreed to be able to work with. We have kimat never seen a mezuzah that didn't need any work whatsoever. So when you combine the people who are writing the mezuzahs on Shabbos, and chas v'shalom, not even in the same category whatsoever, we're talking about mamish lahavdil elef, however many havdalas we can, with the people who are the Erlechi Yerushamayim, is there such a thing as a mezuzah that doesn't need proper hashkafa? The source of the solution for both of these is the same. In order to make sure that we don't have anything that, and I'm not talking about mezuzahs that are getting into the market, we're talking about the ones who are, you know, okay, even if we don't want to go to the extreme, they weren't written on Shabbos, but we're talking about, you know, even those that are just either not checked properly or written by people who did once become certified, but it was 20 years ago and now they haven't learned properly. They're not in the market. They're flooding the market. And the overwhelming majority of what is being sold is coming from those sources. The problem that we've gotten used to
But the source of where this is, and I imagine there's at least a couple of people in this room who probably have said this to themselves over the years, is that I feel confident in what I have because I know who I got it from. But the reality is, which again, which we said at the outset, we wouldn't accept this in any other area, whether it would be kashrus on food or mikvois or arbaminim, whatever the example is you want to give. There's not any other thing that I can think of. Anybody here can correct me if I'm wrong. There's no other system that we have that's okay because I trust somebody who, by the way, is also trusting somebody in many situations, and in just as many situations, he's also trusting somebody. And it's a system that is just completely based on blind trust. So what is it that we need to do in order to be able to make sure that it's not just a trust-based system? Because again, don't forget what we said before, 99% of these items are coming from Eretz Yisrael. So you might have, which I've already met a few of them, and I've known a few of them for many years, right here in London, who are extremely erlicha, wonderful, wonderful people. And a lot of where that's coming from is also from Eretz Yisrael. As far as I know, I've never met anybody in any country who's selling stam and he's coming back and forth to Eretz Yisrael every week, every other week, whatever it is, and he's meeting every single sefer, and he's checking their certification, and he knows exactly where the klaf is coming from. All of these things are a factor. You could have the most beautiful mezuzah in the world that was checked by the most expert magiyim in the world. If the klaf he's writing on was not produced in a halachically reliable manner, the mezuzah is not kosher. So how are we pulling all of these pieces together in order to be 1,000% sure? For many years, the slogan was thrown out there that 99% kosher is 100% puzzle. So what do we do? How do we make it happen? So I don't want anybody to leave here disappointed. The title of the talk is Hashkafa and Stam. I'm not here to set sort of a nightmarish scenario. The good news is that there is Hashkacha in Stam today. And part of what we're using this platform for as well, and many others, is to introduce it to people. And at the end of the day, it's not going to be the Seferim who decide. And I say it with, obviously, the utmost respect possible. It's not going to be the Rabbanim who decide either. It's going to be the Hamoin Am, like myself, and like so many other people, who are going to come out and say, I need to buy a mezuzah. I need to buy a new pair of tefillin. Even a megillah. For sure, a new Sefer Torah for our shul. I'm not maskim to buy any of these items unless they have hashkacha. What does that look like? So, we'll start for a second with what are some of the things that go into making a kosher item. We're going to keep it to mezuzah, because everything else, tefillin, sefer Torah, neviyah, megillas, it gets complicated, sometimes on a little bit of a higher level, sometimes on a much higher level. So we're going to keep it to mezuzah just to keep it simple. We have the materials. Okay, what are these materials? Again, we're not going to talk about batim for tefillin, we're not going to talk about the ritzuas straps, we're not going to talk about the gid we used to sew them up. Keep it to mezuzah for now, just klaf and the ink itself. We mentioned already that if the klaf is not produced in a halachically reliable manner, and again, being here from Eretz Yisrael and having been in the industry for the last 16 years that I've been in the industry personally, and with all the work that we're doing now in Hashkacha, I can tell you definitively there are many, many klaf manufacturers in Eretz Yisrael that are not reliable. There are many klaf manufacturers that are reliable. Who's the one who's sifting through and making sure that only the ones that everybody in this room, I wouldn't even ask anybody to say by a show of hands, how many people in this room would feel comfortable buying a mezuzah that you know was written by the greatest cipher in the world, checked by the greatest magiyim in the world, and was written on cloth that was unreliably produced? I don't think anybody. Same thing is for the ink. Ink is a less complicated process, but at the end of the day, it is something that there have been inks that have been produced in the past that were problematic. Again, hard for us to be able to really feel confident in the kashrus of the stam that we have if that's the situation. The other part that goes into a mezuzah is the sefer.
right? We basically have the materials, the sefer, and the magia, keeping it as the most simple example we can for now. A sefer must have certification from a recognized organization. There's not that many recognized organizations today. Stamp is one of them. There are others. Again, we probably need to put the actual statistics together. But I think if you ask anybody who is working in the industry in Eretz Yisrael, they will tell you that, Baruch Hashem, things have changed over the last few years, but looking back to the way things were predominantly for the last few decades, a lot of seferim did not have certification. And you know why they didn't bother with the certification? It wasn't the money. Maybe it was the fact that they were afraid to have to admit that they didn't know the halachos properly or whatever it was. They didn't get certified in many cases because nobody cared whether or not they were certified. They were making just as many sales without being certified. And certification is not a one-time thing. There is no organization that offers certification and then just says you're certified for life. Our organization says that the certification is good for 1 year. Other organizations, many of them say that it's good for 3 years. It has to be kept up with. Many, I think it's fair to say the majority are not. So we keep coming back to the same question. Who's supervising this? Who knows 100% without any suffix whatsoever that the certification is there? On the other hand, he may have certification, but his writing may not be up to par in order for him to really be a sefer. Who's checking on his ksav? Who's making sure that his writing is acceptable and the letters are where they should be and look the way that they should in order that the item itself should be kosher?
He got his certification,
and
probably testing and checking it.
I would hope so. I would hope that they are testing and checking that. Also, in many cases, it's not true. In many cases, it's only writing out just the aleph bays. This is going to be hard for people to believe. But one of the things that we've instituted to combat this problem is that sometimes people were getting certified and they were bringing in other people's ksav. All of these things need to be dealt with, literally from A to Z. And no less important than anything that we just talked about, certification, halachically acceptable ksav, is his yirah shamayim. I don't think many of us would be happy, to say the least, if we knew that our mezuzahs were being written by somebody who was sitting there listening to a football game while he was in the middle of writing. Who's checking that out? Please.
Is there a choice in how you write the letters? Can you write the letters in different ways and they're still kosher?
Well, the mezuzah has to have uniformity when it comes to the style. Now, there are different styles. The three most common that people in this room would be, probably would be Ashkenaz, that we call Beis Yosef, Ksav Ari, for more of the Hasidish style, and Sfardi, which we refer to as Velish. But you can't have a mix within the same one. You have to be consistent. You can switch from one mezuzah to the next, but within that mezuzah, you do have to keep everything consistent. What's that? Between Beis Yosef and Ksav Ari, Ashkenaz and Hasidish, there's not that many differences. There's only a few letters that have, halachically speaking, there are major differences. But to the eye, the changes are not that significant. And between those two and Sfardi, definitely a very, very big difference. It's a whole, you have to be trained differently to be able to know how to write those. So that's the cipher. The Magia is basically the same thing. The Magia, just instead of all what we said in terms of writing, is just in terms of checking. But again, certification, absolutely. Halachically acceptable writing, or in this case, checking, absolutely. That work has to be supervised, just like anybody in any profession would have to have it supervised. And Yirah Shamayim, nonetheless. Again, if I had a chance to be able to, I'll hold this up over here for people to be able to see it online. That I'm just using this booklet that our organization has produced that gives a lot of examples about the different aspects that have to be checked and that we have to be mindful of in ensuring that the item itself is kosher. It's not, it's hard to see over here, but we can also give out the web page where you can download this as a PDF as well. Missing letters, it happens all the time. Just give an example. In the beginning of Shema, when it says the word Livonecha, the word Livonecha is spelled with a yud, but it's pronounced without a yud. It's a very easy thing for a sefer to miss. Mezuzos. The word mezuzos is spelled different in two different places. Toitafos is spelled different in two different places. Who's checking to make sure that all of those are there? Is computer checking? It's true. That's a whole nother parsha. All of that has to be checked. You can also have misshaped letters. Misshaped letters are some of the most common things that can passel a mezuzah. If sometimes a tiny little aspect of one letter, which again, we'll find a way to get everybody the pictures to be able to see these, but sometimes it's just the tiniest aspect of one letter that's out of place or missing altogether that can threaten the kashrus of the mezuzah. I'll show it over here just because I feel like it's probably one of the most common examples. It's a little bit hard to see, but over here, we have a picture of a yud that has a little, what we call a kotz, a little protrusion that comes down on the bottom left side. If that's missing, so then the mezuzah itself is puzzle. Imagine how many yudin are in the mezuzah, and if that tiny little kotz is missing, now it can be added. But as long as it's not there, the mezuzah is not kosher. There's issues that we have to look at. We don't have time to get into it now. Issues of spacing between the letters that are too close. They're not allowed to be touching each other. They're also not allowed to be too far apart from each other. There's all kinds of issues that have to go into the blackness of the writing itself, and so on and so forth. So what can we do in order to be able to make sure that we do not fall into this category of people who, by the way, like I told the story before about the person who fell on the floor crying, realizing that he had never put on tefillin in his life. You see in that kind of a story, and it happens, Rachmana Litzlan, to so many people that they don't figure out these issues for decades. It's not just something that we wake up one Elul when we decide to get our mezuzahs checked, and only then we realize it. For some people, it's their entire life. The answer is, which again, today has become the reality, is that we should not be buying mezuzahs unless it has a proper hashgacha. Hashgacha means that this hashgacha, which I'll say just as a general principle, must, in my opinion, I don't know if everybody will agree with this, must be separated from the business. The people who are doing the hashgacha should not be the same people who are selling the mezuzah. What is that hashgacha responsible for? The materials are reliably produced. We talk about the cloth and the ink. The hashgacha's responsibility is to make sure that only those materials are being used in that item that they certify. The sefer, like we said before, proper certification, up-to-date certification. He's working together with the magiim who are checking his items to provide him with the feedback to be able to make sure that he can hone his skill even further. We have to be able to speak to people. We have to be able to speak to people who know him, who can vouch for him, and so that we can feel comfortable with him also. And only under those conditions is he a person who everybody in this room and beyond would feel comfortable using, because 99% of the time, those are going to be people who are writing your mezuzahs, they're yours, but you've never met them before. The Hashgacha organization has to be the one looking into that. Same thing for the Magia. Magiim also, we miss things all the time, but we have to be able to make sure that it's being done within a system where the Magiim's work is also being checked on, and therefore we know that even sometimes if something is missed, we have a system of checks and balances in place in order to ensure that if there are mistakes, and there will be, because by definition one of the greatest and most beautiful aspects of Stam is that they can't be mass produced. Everything that we have was, you know, the blood, sweat, and tears that were poured into that item by the sefer. But at the same time, the counter of, you know, where sometimes that becomes tricky, is that people make mistakes. Even the most Erlich Yir Shamayim make mistakes. There has to be a system in place to be able to catch those. That's also the Hashgacha's obligation. And ultimately, what comes out at the end of the day is that this is what we should be looking for. This is a mezuzah that has to be packaged together with the hashgacha itself. And what has plagued the industry for so many years is that all those people we talked about before, where you know somebody's trusting me and I'm trusting somebody else, and I'm the seller, let's say, right? And I'm trusting somebody else and trusting somebody else and trusting somebody else. What has happened in that system is that when the buyer has said, well, who was the sofer? You know what the answer usually is? You don't need to know. I don't understand. It's your mezuzah. You're the one who's going to be using this to be mekayim the mitzvah. You don't deserve to know. But the business aspect, the industrialization of the entire industry is what has taken over. And that's why we said before that it's not about the seferim. And with the utmost kavod, it's not even necessarily about the rabbanim or the hashgachas themselves. It's about the people taking the control back and saying, this is the way that we are maskim moving forward, in order to be sure that what we have is the only thing that we should be putting up in our homes, that we should be putting on our arms and our heads in the morning, and that we should be bringing into our shuls. Yes?
I remember from a previous lecture about this, I think it was by Diane Kelly, the London Bazaar, whoever.
Sure.
That with the tremendous explosion of need for mezuzahs, especially in America or Israel, wherever there's so many more buildings, so many more people are aware of it, etc., there just aren't enough sofrim to cook. Is that a factor?
So somebody asked me that question a while back, and they said that, you know, we would love to help promote this concept of hashkacha and stam. The problem is how can we be increasing demand without an increase in supply? The only reason that people believe that there are enough mezuzahs in the world for all the Jews out there is because of, forgive me for saying it this way, because of the garbage that's flooding the market. There aren't enough mezuzahs for all the Jews in the world, but slowly but surely, as we are not only bringing hashkacha to the industry, but creating seder in the industry where it can also be a respectable parnasa, that is something that I believe will bring more and more people into it. I mean, we talk about it all the time, jokingly, but, you know, this whole concept of artificial intelligence taking over so many, guess what? This is probably the ultimate job security when you're talking about people who are sitting and writing these mezuzahs who can't be replaced. What's that? Well, I would be dishonest after I just said a couple minutes ago that the hashkacha can't be involved in the sales. But I think the more that we push it, the people who we're normally buying from, whether it be a private seller or a store or whatever it is, I walk in and I say, I need a mezuzah. But I'm only interested if it has hashkacha. They're probably going to tell you, in many instances, I don't have a mezuzah without hashkacha. Then I'm not going to buy it.
Yeah, or they're going to tell you that the mezuzah with the hashkacha is considerably more expensive.
They're not.
Somebody has to pay for the hashkacha, though.
Correct.
Who pays for the organization?
Correct. So the reality is that people think that it adds a tremendous amount. But what's also true is that this whole system of I trust and trust and trust and trust, every time that mezuzah changes hands, the price goes up. So the real question is when mezuzahs are often as expensive as they are, why are they that expensive? And if you would institute hashkacha in place of many of those people who are just passing it from one person to another, they're not going to come out to be any more expensive. That's the metzias. Because the system has been so broken, one of the consequences of that is that they've gotten more and more and more expensive, but they're not any higher quality. So no question whatsoever. Just like it works in any kashrus organization, no matter what field we're talking about, the more that people are purchasing mezuzahs with hashkacha, the more the hashkachas themselves can survive. But ultimately, that's why, you know, I've said now for either the third or fourth time, it's the people who are going to ultimately bring this in. The maximum that we can do is set up a system and say, we are here to take care of Klal Yisrael, to make sure that they can be mekayim the mitzvahs properly. That's not where its longevity will come from. It's the setup and it's the system that is needed in place, but the ability for it to last and to survive is going to come from the people saying, I'm not maskim to buy a mezuzah unless it has hashkacha on it. Same thing for tefillin, same thing for Sifrei Torah and for everything else. So it's a bit of a cliffhanger because there's so many details that we didn't get a chance to get to. But again, for anybody who's interested, happy to also share the page where you can download this booklet, where it talks a lot about what's needed in order to be able to make sure that the mezuzah is kosher, some of the issues that we've been facing in the industry, what organizations are doing to solve them, and so on and so forth. And thank everybody for this wonderful opportunity.